True, true. As they pulled into the underground car park in the tall building, Frank parked next to the Colombian's flash Jag. Cool, one day I'll be driving around in one of those. Not long now, Frank. You'll see. Freddie and Marcus got out and waited by the car. Cyril and Frank both gave the Colombians a look that implied, don't mess with us. The bigger Colombian huffed loudly and slapped his hand on the lift button. Cyril gripped the heavy bag and waited. It was awkward, with all four men inside the lift, their arms touching and with tension still running high. The journey up seemed to take forever. Finally, the lift stopped, and the bigger of the two Colombians pulled open the inner cage door and then the outer door. Soon, they were inside Sandoz's office. Frank hadn't seen the place, so he stealthily gazed around until his eyes clocked Sandoz. He, like Cyril had been, was surprised that the man was so young and strikingly handsome, unlike his bodyguards who were like monsters.
So it all went well then, Cyril. No hiccups. And you checked the notes we used.
Cyril placed the bag on the desk and shook Carlo's hand.
All there, all good.
Slowly he turned to face the two bodyguards and pointed a finger.
Except for him. That great pillock wanted to drag me into his motor, and if it wasn't for me own mate,
he flicked his head to Frank,
then I don't know what I would have done. It took Frank and me other pal Marcus to drag this prick off me. So what was that all about, Carlo? I mean, I did exactly as you asked. I set up the deal and executed it to perfection. Now you have a new buyer, but I get treated like that.
Sandoz's eyes narrowed, and his face seemed to darken slowly. He turned towards the Colombian.
Why, Johan?
The Colombian appeared to shrivel up. His face lost its colour, and he looked terrified.
Boss, I didn't trust him. I thought he may run off with the money. I wanted to make sure that he returned the money. He cannot be trusted. You had no right to treat Mr. Reardon in this way. I made the decisions, not you.
His voice and tone were heavy and deep, with an undercurrent of evil. Cyril realised that Sandoz may be a youngster, but he was like a general.
Johan held up his hand. I'm sorry, boss. Very sorry. It won't happen again. I was just protecting you, as your uncle asked me to.
The subtext of that remark was not lost on Sandoz. Banging his fist on the desk, he shouted.
And he also told you that you work for me now, not him.
Unexpectedly, Johan looked at Cyril.
I'm very sorry if I have insulted you.
Sandoz glared.
If Cyril accepts your apology, then you live. If he doesn't, you die. Whoa, whoa, whoa. No one needs to die. Shit, I accept his apology. But he owes me one.
Sandoz burst out laughing. He walked around the desk and hugged Cyril as he continued to laugh.
Get my friend. He turned to Johan. His Pepsi or cola or whatever. And you?
He pointed to Frank.
Would you like a real man's drink with me? Nah, mate. I'll have a Pepsi. We don't drink on any job, do we, Mr. Reardon?
Cyril felt in charge and smiled.
No, Frank, we don't drink on the job. None of my men drink on the job, do they, Frank?
Frank knew what Cyril was up to and played along.
No, Mr. Reardon, none of us do.
15 minutes later, after some general chit-chat which gave Sandoz an opportunity to learn more about Cyril's business ideas, Sandoz raised his brow and then smiled.
Gentlemen, would you please leave us? Cyril and I have personal business to discuss.
Frank glanced at Cyril, who nodded in response. The minute Sandoz's thugs and Frank left the room, Sandoz laughed again as he returned to his seat behind his desk.
I don't know what it is about you, Cyril, but I think you have more than just charm.
Cyril sipped the Pepsi Cola that had been placed in front of him. I'm only too pleased to have paid back in kind what I owed. I can now leave on good terms. Sandoz's face dropped instantly.
But I have an offer for you.
Cyril got up and shook his head.
Oh, no, no. I'm okay, thank you very much. We had a deal and I kept up my end of the bargain. And I believe you are a man of your word, so you will keep yours.
Sandoz hurried around from his desk and gripped Cyril's arm.
Wait, please, Cyril. Let's talk. You are right. I am a man of my word. But I have an offer. An excellent offer. Please, grace me with your presence to hear what I have to say. Sensing Sandor seemed genuine, Cyril sat down again. Far away? Sandor turned to a landscape painting behind him on the wall. Pulling the right-hand side of the frame towards him, he entered the code to open a large safe, whose interior revealed bundles of notes. Sandor took three of these from the safe and slapped them on the desk. These, Cyril, are yours. Cyril's eyes widened, but he was conscious he shouldn't come across as too eager or excited. I need a business partner, and to be honest, there are not many people I trust, but for some reason, I do trust you. I have a product to sell, but I don't have many buyers. He walked over to the window and stared across at the London landscape. There must be thousands of buyers out there, but, Cyril, I want the big dealers who, and I mean who, can be trusted. For every buyer you bring my way, there will be a package for you the size of this one. Cyril stared at all the money and felt his excitement climbing. Let me get this straight. I find you trustworthy buyers. I don't have to get me hands dirty, and you will give me a cut. Is that right? Sandor returned to his seat and nodded. Not just a cut. A big cut. I don't want to work for you, Carlo, but I will work with you. Unexpectedly, Sandor leapt from his seat and hugged his newfound friend. Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Cyril left the office with three giant bundles of money and a huge smile on his face. He was in business, and nothing was going to stand in his way now. Chapter 17. Frank was waiting outside the room for Cyril, and as soon as he clocked the elation on Cyril's face, he knew that whatever had gone on in there was good news. They casually left the building and climbed into the car. Cyril then pulled the bundles of money from inside his jacket. The second Frank was out of the car park and down the road, Cyril threw the money up in the air. It hit the headlining and scattered everywhere. What the hell is all this? Screeched Marcus. Frank was trying to concentrate on his driving, but the notes had landed everywhere. We gentlemen are going to be fucking raking it in. Go to the lockup, Frank, so that we can share this up. What? Is some of this coming our way, Cyril? Asked Freddy. This, my friend, is money that I owe you guys. You put your neck on the line, and so fair's fair. We split it four ways. Freddy and Marcus were grinning like Cheshire cats as they stared at the money. Neither of them had seen that much in all their lives. Now, lads, there's more where that came from. But, guys, it's a risky business. But fuck me, we'll be loaded. Now I've plans to make and scores to settle. Scores to settle? Inquired Frank. Yep. That poxy Johnny Carter ain't getting away with picking a fight with me in the street over his so-called bloody manor. The afternoon was spent counting the money and making plans. The excitement between the four of them had raised their confidence. The dynamics were established, and the setup was perfect. Frank had his stack tucked in his pocket and was off to take Trudy out for a meal. He dropped Cyril off at the foot of the tower block and then drove off. Cyril was just glad to be back home so he could take his suit off. He was sure the sweat marks on his shirt would stand out. It had been a day of nerves, but the afternoon had finished with a smile. As Cyril slid the key in the lock and turned the handle, he thought for a moment he heard a man's voice. But the walls were thin, and the old fella next door could be very loud, especially when he was hammered. Cyril didn't slam the door, but quietly closed it and crept to his room. He didn't want to worry his mother by carrying bundles of cash, or have her asking questions that really he couldn't answer without lying. Then he heard the voice again, and it sounded as though it was actually coming from the kitchen. As he strained his ears, he thought he recognised who it was, yet it appeared as though the words were spat out through gritted teeth in a low mumble. Then he heard the anxious tone in his mother's voice. I swear to God, I don't have any more money. You took my last bloody shilling last week. I gave you everything you wanted. Now leave me alone.
You, Peggy Reardon, tell lies.
And we both know that, don't we? The dead landlord, that was you. And considering the past, I've no doubt about it, none at all.
Cyril felt his throat tighten. He wanted to charge in and give whoever was talking to his mother a good bashing. However, something told him to stay put and just listen. If he heard his mother scream, he would run in. Then he had another thought. The gun was still behind the panel. Quickly, he grabbed the knife he kept under his pillow. Quietly, he prized the panel away from the bottom of the wardrobe, and then he retrieved the gun. He could hear the man pacing the kitchen floor.
I didn't kill the bloody landlord, and I had an alibi for that. Anyway, I had a good reason for what happened in the past, as well you know.
You were hauled in for the murdered landlord, though, weren't you? And it wouldn't have been the first time, would it? I bet the police don't know about your past back in Ireland, do they? Now, if you wanted to stay that way, then you hand over the money. And don't you fucking lie to me again that you ain't got any. I know where you get yours. Your family are fucking loaded. Look at Cyril walking about in his flash suit. But I know he don't have a job, so where's he getting the money from, eh?
I had a few lucky games of poker, and I shared the money with him and Towie, so there ain't none. Now leave me alone.
I'll leave you alone when I'm good and ready. You're me wife, after all, so who's going to say anything to me? What goes on between man and wife stays between man and wife.
Get your fucking hands off me, you drunken bastard!
That was all Cyril needed to hear, to have him flying into the kitchen wielding a gun.
Get away from my mother, he bellowed.
Cyril could see that Reginald Reardon was shocked to the core by his entrance. The man nearly jumped out of his skin. It was clear to Cyril that his father had aged more than his mother had. He was clean-shaven, but his hair needed a wash, and his teeth were rotten. He was a stranger, and a memory that had faded so much over the years that he wondered if he'd only ever imagined having a father. He couldn't remember what exactly he looked like, or even anything about his personality. But he still recalled his father shouting a lot and his mother crying when he had left them. He glared with spite.
I said, get the fuck away from my mother!
Reginald let go of Peggy and stared his son up and down.
I thought you'd be pleased to see me, Cyril. I'm your old man, after all. Will, you're mistaken, spat Cyril, glaring at him with a face like thunder.
Looking at the weapon in Cyril's hand, Reginald felt a little nervous. He really hadn't expected his eldest son to turn against him so much. He assumed that Cyril would be overjoyed to see him and to welcome him with open arms. He lashed back.
A gun, is it, Cyril? You're holding a fucking shooter up at your father's face. Is that right?
Cyril was livid that his father was so cocky and yet nasty with it. He aimed the gun and tilted his head.
Father, that's what you call yourself, is it? You ain't my father. You mean fuck all to me.
He glanced at his mum to see if she was okay.
And you mean fuck all to me, mum? Now, unless you want a bullet put through that face of yours, you better get out. And don't you ever come back threatening and fucking blackmailing my mum, you low-life piece of dog shit.
Reginald's arms were by his side. His shoulders stooped. But then he suddenly threw his head back and gave a fake laugh.
Do you think you're some kind of gangster? Is that it, Cyril? The only thing different about you is that you ain't so scrawny now.
Cyril didn't give him the courtesy of a response.
Look at you, in your flash shoes and your gun. You'll be in prison soon enough.
He waved his hand at Peggy.
Like she should have been. Well, I suppose you take after her side of the family then.
Cyril smirked.
I guess I fucking do, because I will never turn out like you. I will take care of my responsibilities, if I ever have any. I won't abandon my family like you abandoned your wife and two sons. Two?
Cyril frowned. He didn't quite follow what his father was implying. He glanced at his mother, who had her hands to her mouth.
Well, if I ain't your boy, then that's one less thing to worry about now, ain't it, Reginald? You thought you could hurt me that way. Wrong.
The cocky grin and the mocking brow told Cyril there was more to this.
Oh, Cyril, I ain't talking about you.
Shut up, Reginald, and leave. For Christ's sake, just leave it alone, will you?
Screamed Peggy. But Reginald was drunk, and he didn't care.
They have a right to know.
No, please, Reg, stop it. That was enough for Cyril.
Get the fuck out of this flat now. I don't care what you have to say. You ain't going to upset my mum, you stinking rat. Now fuck off.
Reginald stared at Cyril as if he'd never seen him before, and at that moment he knew that Cyril was going to be a handful. But the image of his son riled him up. In fact, he was jealous. Looking at this boy, with his boyish face and smart suit, but most striking of all, the confidence in which he held himself, made Reginald feel depressed. He should have worn that suit and that stance himself, not be standing here in a kitchen that wasn't even his, wearing a second-hand pair of trousers and shoes with holes in, while his son held a gun to his head. This wasn't how it was supposed to be. He'd come back from Ireland when his fancy piece had thrown him out. He still thought he had the charm and the looks, but clearly he hadn't peered in the mirror lately, because if he had, he would have seen that he was like a shadow of his former self.
All right, I'll leave. But know this, that slut of a mother of yours...
He didn't get a chance to finish. Cyril swiped him hard across the mouth with his gun. Reginald fell back, but grabbed the work surface to stop himself from hitting the floor. Once he'd straightened up, he wiped his hand across his mouth, looked at the blood, and then at Cyril.
You ever call my mum a slut again, and I'll throw you off this tower block, and they'll need a snow shovel to scrape you up.
Reginald pushed himself away from the worktop and stormed towards the front door. But just before he left, he shouted back like a child.
Know this, Cyril. Howie ain't your brother.
Peggy quickly grabbed Cyril's arm before he fired the gun. The door slammed shut. Peggy let go of her son, lowered her head, and sobbed. Cyril placed the gun on the table and an arm around her shoulders.
He is me brother, Mum. I couldn't give a flying shit what that stinking rotten bastard says. It's me, you and Howie against the world, Mum.
She sniffed and blew her nose on her apron.
Oh, my God. Why would he do that to me? I never ever did him any wrong, never.
Well, let's hope he won't come back, because I don't know if I can stop myself from shooting the bastard. Anyway, sit down, Mum. You've had a shock. I'll make us a cup of tea.
Peggy sat and blew her nose once more.
I...
She sighed.
Mum, I don't care what me dad said. Howie's my brother. You don't have to say any more, not to me.
I think I owe it to you before that bastard comes back and tries to cause more problems.
You owe me nothing, Mum. And as for him, if he comes back, I will kill him. Did he hurt you, Mum?
No, only with his spiteful tongue.
Cyril got up to make the tea.
It's true about Howie, bless his little heart. Well, he ain't your fool, brother.
Cyril had his back to Peggy as he poured the hot water into the teapot. His heart ached. Not for the fact Howie was not his full blood brother, but because his father had used this against her to blackmail her. It was true he didn't care that Howie was only his half-brother. As far as he was concerned, Howie was his only brother. Cyril placed the teapot, the milk jug and the cups on the table, and then took his seat. Peggy poured herself a cup, but her hand shook so much she struggled to hold the cup high enough to take a sip.
Why has he come back after all this time? Asked Cyril.
Stalling her answer, Peggy finally managed to sip her tea.
Mum?
Okay, Cyril. Look, he needs money, and he has something over me that could have me locked up for a long time. He's threatened to share it with the police if I don't pay him off.
What does he have over you?
She placed a cup on the saucer.
I killed someone.
Totally shocked by her response, Cyril could only stare at her in amazement. He just couldn't imagine his mother as a murderer. But then his mind went back to the fight with the deacons and the image of his mother hammering her stiletto heel into that bloke's head.
But it was self-defence, surely?
Slowly she shook her head.
No. Well, not directly. He was your father's friend, back in Ireland. I was alone at home. You were a baby, barely 5 months old. Your father was out with...
She paused and stared into nothing.
Well, I don't know who your father was with. Anyway, your father's friend was called Felix. He was really creepy, but a bold kind of lad. He was always ogling me and I hated him. Your father liked him, and when I told him that he was undressing me with his eyes, he said I imagined it, and I was not to encourage him. But I wasn't leading him on at all. I couldn't stand him.
Cyril reached across and grabbed his mother's hand.
I don't need to know any more, Mum. You don't have to say anything else. Yeah, I think you should know what happened, because I don't want you to think I'm a cold-blooded killer. And if your father does shoot his mouth off to the police, then at least you would have heard the truth from me.
Cyril nodded.
Okay, Mum. So your father was out, and I was in my nightgown. You were in your cot that my dad had made for you.
She paused and swallowed hard to stop the tears.
To cut a long story short, he overpowered me and I couldn't stop him. All I kept thinking was that Reg would never believe me. He would think I led him on, because the fact was your father thought more of his mate than me. I was a fool to have fallen in love with such a deadbeat like Reginald.
So it was self-defence then?
Peggy shook her head. No, wait. I didn't kill him then. It was 3 months later when I found I was expecting Howie and your father was off up the pub to celebrate. That's when Felix came back to the house. He was drunk and laughing at me. He said the baby I was carrying was probably his, and he would tell Reg that I came on to him, and that I was secretly in love with him. And if the baby had dark hair, then it would prove it was his.
She stopped to catch her breath.
I had the iron in my hand. I remember I just pulled it out of the fire, ready to iron your father's shirt, when something inside me just exploded. 1 minute I was feeling angry, and then the next, Felix was on the floor with his head caved in. I stood there, frozen, thinking, what the hell have I done? The blood was still dripping off the iron, and the smell of the burning blood was awful.
Oh, Mum, you must have been terrified. What a bastard.
She sighed heavily.
I was still staring at his face, all smashed up and grotesque, when my dad came in through the back door with a sack of potatoes. I remember he dropped it and the sack split. And one potato rolled across the floor and right through the pool of blood. It's funny what sticks in your mind.
Cyril was on the edge of his seat, listening to his mother.
So how did you explain what had happened?
My dad didn't ask why or how or anything. He took the iron from me and sat me down. Then I remember him saying, I best get this mess cleaned up. And I thought, shit, yeah, it'll ruin me best rug. I must have really hated that Felix bloke, eh?
Cyril was so shocked all he could do was nod.
Reginald walked in through the front door just as me dad wrapped Felix up in a Hessian sack. Me father went mad and said that Reginald had been warned about Felix and now he had to keep his mouth shut.
What happened then, Mum?
Peggy took another sip of her tea.
My dad took the body away and buried Felix somewhere, but I don't know where. Reginald was afraid of me dad, so all the time me dad was alive, I guess Reg went along with it. But it's different now. My dad, God rest his soul, is no threat to Reginald, so now the bastard wants money to keep his mouth shut.
Cyril gulped back his tea to loosen his tongue from the roof of his mouth. He was staggered beyond belief. But it certainly wasn't because this barrage of shocking information had dented his perfect picture of his mum. Far from it, in fact. It wasn't a case of seeing her as less than perfect. Rather, it had opened his eyes to the idea that his mother was a warrior. A woman who stood no nonsense and took no shit. Yet what he couldn't come to terms with was why she was so afraid of his dad.
Leave him to me, Mum. I'll deal with him. You don't still love him, though, do you?
Staring at nothing with her elbows on the table and holding the teacup to her chin, she said,
No. I thought I did, though. I even waited and hoped every day for years, even beyond the time that I knew he wouldn't come back, that he would return. I fell in love with a young man who was, dare I say it, handsome. He was kind and sweet, so I thought. I guess the truth is he was a user. He dated me because I was young and I was my father's daughter. He looked up to me dad, you see. Anyway, I loved him so much that I couldn't really see what was going on. I made excuses for his drinking and for his wandering eye. Not now, though. Now it's different, because now I realise that my boys grew up without a father, without all the things they should have had. You and Howie went without far too much, and it was his fault. So to answer your question, Cyril, no, I don't still love him. Not a bit of it. I hate the man. He is a stranger to me. Do you hate him, Cyril? Cyril shrugged his shoulders. I never knew him, did I? All I knew was the aftermath. We couldn't go to the butchers or the grocers because that bastard owed money to everyone. Peggy felt tears well up in her eyes again as she glanced at the gun. It's all his fault, you know. Cyril followed her eyeline and frowned when he realised she was referring to the weapon on the table. If he hadn't buggered off and had found work here, then you would never have felt the need to do all the things you did and are still doing. You would probably be at university now, learning to be a solicitor, no doubt. A sudden chuckle left Cyril's mouth. No, Mum, that was never going to happen. I told you, I'm going to be a lord in my own castle one day. You watch me. Go and put that thing somewhere safe in case your father decides to call the old bill. Cyril nodded. Just as he got up to leave the kitchen, he spun around. Mum, how did he know where we live? She sighed again. You know when I went to the tea dance in the lovely dress you got me? Well, he must have seen me there. I didn't see him, though, the sly bastard. I guess he saw the expensive dress and shoes and decided to follow me to see where we lived. And since then he spent time spying on me and you. I've already given him money to stay away. He's come back for more. But I don't have any more to give him, and I don't want you to give him any because he'll always be coming back here for my money. It will be never-ending. No, he flaming well won't. I'll make sure of it. Do you know where he's staying? Peggy moved the wisps of hair from her face and shook her head. No, I don't. But I do know he's following us. He knew when I last had a win on the poker. Cyril ground his back teeth in anger. I'll make sure he doesn't follow you again, Mum. What are you going to do, Cyril? I don't want you to get into any trouble. Mum, leave it all to me. And don't worry. It was early evening when Cyril knocked at Mr. Bates's door in the usual way with a bundle of notes tucked in his jacket. Mr. Bates answered the door and flicked his head as usual for Cyril to come in.
So what brings you here? I'm guessing it all went well with the Colombian.
Oh, that? Yeah, that went like a dream. But that's not why I'm here.
Mr. Bates frowned.
Oh, really? What's the problem?
Cyril pulled the money from his jacket and slapped it on the coffee table.
I need someone taken care of.
Mr. Bates looked at the money and then at Cyril.
Please don't tell me you want the Colombian.
No, Christ no. It's me father I want sorting out.
Mr. Bates stiffened.
Reginald Reardon? Why?
Because he's come back to the area after all these bleeding years and he's now making me mum's life a nightmare.
Mr. Bates scrutinised Cyril's expression.
Yeah, son, I can have him taken away. But only if you tell me the truth. I know your mother well enough to know that someone like your father wouldn't be a serious problem for a woman like her.
He's a pest, following her and me and getting nosy.
He stopped when he saw Mr. Bates shake his head.
What?
He's blackmailing her, isn't he?
Feeling in an uncomfortable predicament, Cyril realised he either came clean or pressed Mr. Bates for what he knew.
Why would you say that?
Mr. Bates went over to his favourite chair by the window and chuckled.
I know more about your family's past than you do, son.
So, what would me father blackmail her with?
Ah, I see your game, Cyril. Clever thinking, lad. Something happened when you were a baby. Let's just say it was a situation that should have been left dead and buried. But if it's what I think it is, then yeah, I'll have a word with Reginald.
No, blurted out Cyril. Sorry, I don't mean have a word with him. I want him got rid of. Permanently.
Mr. Bates looked at the money and shook his head. Which riled up Cyril. He snatched up the notes.
I'll find someone else then. Oi,
Stop having a strop like a child. I shook me head because I don't need the money.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Bates. I'm just so fucking angry right now.
See, now that's another thing you need to work on, lad. Your temper and impatience. Crikey, how the fuck you are going to make any money, Gord only knows. You'll make more enemies than mates.
Cyril gave him a smug grin and sat down.
My dad's a nasty piece of work. I've already smacked him one in the face. I really wanted to shoot him. Instead, I managed to catch him with the butt of me...
He stopped when he realised what he'd said.
A gun, eh?
Yeah. I found it when I found the drugs.
Don't ever keep that weapon in the house. If that gun is associated with previous murders, you'll get done for the lot.
Cyril hadn't thought of that. He realised then he still had a lot to learn.
Bring the gun to me, and I'll make sure he is seen to. But, Cyril, tell me, are you sure you want to do this? He is your father.
Is he? The only thing that makes him my father is the blood in my veins. But other than that, he isn't a father to me. And that's the only reason I didn't kill him. Because trust me, Mr. Bates, if it had been any other man, then I wouldn't have hesitated. I would have knifed him right through the heart and laughed while I did it. But I'll tell you this, if he comes back and upsets me mum, I won't give him another chance. I will kill him.
Chapter 18. Every time Cyril met the lads at the lockup, he would bring something to make the place more comfortable, and it became a regular occurrence. Frank even brought over an old but clean sofa. Cyril had a high back padded seat, which made him appear taller than the others, and Marcus brought a crate of Pepsi and a few beers. They planned to sustain their money pot, and so the first thing was to make inquiries as to what the Carters were up to, because word had it that Johnny Carter was seen in the Cedar Arms with Red Deacon. And before Red's battering, Johnny Carter and the Deacons were arch enemies. Frank chuckled.
It seems to me, Cyril, that you pose a real threat to the likes of the Carters.
Cyril put his feet up on the table and leaned back on the chair.
Well, best I make sure Johnny Carter knows I am. I mean, who the fuck do they think they are? Their turf? What a load of bollocks.
I heard that the landlord of the Red Lion pays Johnny protection money, said Frank.
Cyril grinned.
Oh, really? So does the Queen's Head and the Olive Tree, said Marcus, joining in.
Frank stared at Cyril.
Come on. What are you thinking?
Cyril removed his feet from off the table and sat upright.
Freddie, do us a favour. Can you check that out? I want to be 100% sure that's the case before I go traipsing through there like a bull in a china shop.
I get it. You want to show that the Carters can't protect the pubs? And so why are the landlords paying for protection?
Said Freddie, highly pleased with himself. Cyril clapped.
Oh, Freddie, you ain't slow, are you?
Fuck off, said Freddie, laughing.
Your brothers will know for sure, won't they?
Freddie nodded and jumped up from his chair.
Keith's in, I think. I'll have a word. Oh, yeah, by the way, me little sister has only got engaged to some toff. He's a right knobby, is and all. He's in the army or the navy. I don't know. Anyway, they're having a big do-up West London way. Me mum's told me to invite you. It's next month. Can I bring my Flossie and can Frank bring Trudy?
Freddie suddenly blushed.
Yeah, I'm taking my girlfriend. And Marcus is with Tilly, so yeah, I don't see why not.
Cyril smiled.
A girlfriend, eh, Freddie? You kept that quiet.
It wasn't surprising since Freddie was the best looking out of the Blake family. He had a fashionable face, much like Paul Newman, with his bright blue eyes and blonde locks. Freddie blushed again.
We've only been courting for a month.
Before the lads had a chance to tease him further, Freddie hurried out of the lock-up. There was a phone box a quarter of a mile away, so he made a call to his brother there. They didn't have to wait long before he returned with the information confirming that the protection racket was true.
Right, lads. First things first, I want to stop that little con dead in its tracks.
Frank chewed his lip and then sighed.
Listen, Cyril, are you sure about this, mate? I mean, the Carters are a big family of nutters.
Cyril shrugged.
I bet half of them are living off their uncle's name. And let's be honest, you, Frank, on your own, could do that. Everyone knows your father was a nut job. And what about you, Freddie?
You have a tribe at home, all with criminal records. If your family clubbed together, they could take down half of London.
And what about you, Cyril? Asked Marcus.
Me? He laughed. Me, I have two fists, a hard head and a fucking cocky attitude. And I ain't too bad looking either.
The three lads laughed, as they always did at Cyril's quips. By 9 p.m, the Red Lion was packed to the rafters. Cyril walked through the crowd with Marcus, Frank and Freddy behind him. As the landlord turned to face them, his expression changed. There, among the youngsters having fun, walked a young man with a confident swagger and a crafty expression on his face. Behind him were big, burly men ready for business, not there, obviously, to dance to Rock Around the Clock.
"I take it you're the landlord?" inquired Cyril, as he stared unblinkingly at the man behind the bar.
The landlord noticed the man was putting on a pair of black leather gloves.
Yeah? Why?
I want a word with your security."
Rufus Ruggle was a bony-framed man with deep-set eyes and a nervous twitch. He had taken over the pub from his father and hated every bit of it. His father, a domineering man, occupied the flat upstairs, and so Rufus couldn't just get out of the business. He had to bide his time. He didn't like the responsibility or the violence, which often occurred on a Saturday from a few of the local punters once they'd downed their 6 or 7 pints. Ruggle shot his eyes to the right to two men sitting at a table sipping beers. Cyril wanted to laugh, but instead he nodded politely and made his way over to the two men. The lads followed and surrounded the table. It took a few seconds for the two seated men to work out that they were somewhat fenced in because the pub was so busy.
"Call yourself protection, yeah?" hissed Cyril in the bald man's ear.
Suddenly the man jumped up and faced Cyril. He was bigger than Cyril had first anticipated, but not as big as Frank or Marcus. The other man who was seated also jumped up, but he was roughly the same size as Cyril.
"You best stop it," said Cyril,
flexing his fingers in the tight-fitting black leather gloves.
"What the fuck is this? You stupid kid! Leave before I throw you out," growled the bald man.
Cyril nodded. "Is that right, Mr. Baldy? Because I don't think you have the muscle behind your threat. Me, I have 3 men that will buckle you and your gormless pal there. So like I said, op it, and you can tell your boss that his silly protection racket is over. Me, I run this pub now. Got it?"
The bald man looked at the 3 men, and even though he and his mate were outnumbered, and they could easily receive a beating, he reckoned he had the experience, so he wasn't going to bow down to a bunch of kids. Silently, he narrowed his hooded eyes and squared up to Cyril. In a fast movement, he pulled his fist back and punched Cyril clean in the face. Cyril didn't see the blow coming. The punch was hard and fast and knocked him over, and as he tried to get to his feet, he was booted in the ribs. The other guy, who had been seated, now had the guts to join in. He threw a punch that hit Marcus on the chin. However, Marcus, unlike Cyril, didn't flinch. Instead, he returned a punch and sent the man somersaulting backwards over the chair and through the bay window. The bald guy glanced to his side to see the devastation and held up his fists, ready to take them all on. But it was Frank who took on the challenge, and although he was clumped in the side of the face, he didn't go down and instantly landed a right hook that had the man wobbling. 2 more quick jabs and his attacker was down. Cyril was up and fingering his jaw when he noticed Frank pull out his knife. But Cyril was too late to intervene. Frank ran the blade down the man's face.
"Now you were told to op it, to fucking op it."
When the punters saw blood, one woman screamed and a group of men slipped out. This fight wasn't a street brawl or a scuffle. This was business. The bald guy got up, held his cheek and glared at Frank.
"You fucking cockroach."
Cyril was now steady on his feet, and so was the bald guy. They stared at each other until Cyril spoke.
"Go back and tell your boss that he has no protection racket anymore, and if he wants to argue the point, then he'll get the same treatment."
The bald man narrowed his eyes, still clutching his face, as the blood dripped between his fingers. He said,
"And who shall I say you are?"
"Cyril Reardon."
The bald man had heard that name in connection with the battering that Johnny Carter had received a while ago. He nodded and looked out of the broken window to see his pal limping away. He shook his head.
I'll tell him.
Cyril nodded. Good man. Oh, and I take it every other pub in this neck of the woods has two men like you sitting there in Johnny Carter's name.
Not all of the pubs, only the busy ones.
He pulled his hand away from his face and tried to wiggle his tight jaw. He guessed that not only had the big guy scarred his face, but he'd broken his jaw as well.
It looks like I'll need a new boss, because I can guess you and your men will be taking over.
Yep. He waited for an offer, but Cyril just stared him down and then nodded for him to leave. Once everyone had left the pub, Cyril approached the bar, only to find the landlord as white as a ghost.
So, Mr. Ruggle, Rufus Ruggle.
Frank sniggered, and Cyril elbowed him to stop laughing.
Mr. Ruggle, it appears that your protection need protection themselves, wouldn't you say?
Ruggle, who was scared to death, nodded.
Great. So, I don't charge a lot. Tell me, how much did you pay the Carters?
40% of the night's takings.
What? Screeched Cyril.
No, seriously, I swear, it is 40%. I really couldn't keep this pub open if I had to pay more than that. I'm struggling as it is.
Cyril wanted to laugh, but he held it in. He had no idea that protection rackets could rake in so much money. He wanted to test the water.
So how much have you taken tonight?
Ruggle nervously looked at the men. I haven't had a chance to count it out. I can do it now, Mr.
Cyril nodded.
Mr. Reardon.
Yep, go on then.
Ruggle emptied the till and counted all the notes, all the while glancing fearfully at the four men.
£40.
Cyril smiled.
Okay. So you keep all the money tonight to pay for the window. I will have two of my men in here on a Friday and Saturday to make sure your pub stays aggro-free.
Ruggle was still in shock, but when he found his tongue, he asked,
How much do you want?
If you get this pub done up a bit,
he looked down at the dirty lino and then at the tatty stalls,
I'll charge you just 20%.
Suddenly Ruggle's face lit up.
Really?
Yep. Now, get that window boarded up, and if any of the Carters come knocking, you tell them to talk to me.
Ruggle nodded and gazed in astonishment as the men left the pub. Frank, as usual, drove back towards the lock-up. The firm were full of excitement with plans to take over the other pubs. Before Frank turned left, just off the Old Kent Road, Cyril stopped him.
Do us a favour. Can you drop me off at home first?
Are you sure, mate?
Yeah. You go back with Freddie and Marcus, but drop us at the end of the road. I can walk. I need to do a bit of thinking.
Frank chuckled.
Thinking? You go and knock yourself out, mate.
Walking casually to the tower block, Cyril clutched his jaw. That thump was hard, and it had knocked his confidence. It had him questioning if all this bravado was really him. Had he just got himself caught up in the moment every time and gained his thrills from the adrenaline rush, or was it the money he wanted? But more than any concerns for himself were those for his friends. He was leading them down the same pathway. They followed him, regardless of their own safety. He was now responsible for three lads, and he wondered if he was old enough, big enough, and had enough clout. A commotion from the tower block stopped his musings. Glancing up, he suddenly turned stone cold. There on the balcony, outside his front door, were Frank's father and Shirley. His door was open, and they were shouting to someone inside. The circumstances looked odd to Cyril. Why would Henry be outside, screaming down his hallway? A feeling of dread coiled around his stomach. In a blind panic, he tore up the stairs and along the outside walkway. Shirley spotted him before he reached the door. She grabbed his arm and whispered, "Don't go in there, Cyril!" As Cyril looked past her, his breathing intensified.
"What the hell's happened? Where's me mum?"
He tried to break free, but Shirley had a tight grip on his arm.
"Wait, Cyril! Don't go charging in! The geezer's got a fucking match!"
Cyril frowned. He had no idea what Shirley was talking about until the smell of petrol hit him.
Fuck me, is me mum inside?
Shirley's eyes were wide with terror. She nodded.
There's a bloke in with her. He's in the living room, threatening to kill her if we call the police. I think he's waiting for you, Cyril. But please, don't run in, or he'll strike a fucking match. He's got a box of Swan Vestas, and you know how they spark.
Cyril relaxed his arms and stared at Shirley as he quickly devised a plan.
Shirley, go and fetch Mr. Bates. Tell him to bring me tool. He'll know what I mean.
Shirley let go of Cyril and ran like the clappers to the lift. By now, a few of the other neighbours had stepped onto the walkway in their dressing gowns, all wanting to know what the hell was going on. Cyril tried to gesticulate they should go back inside. However, living next door was Mr. Williams, who liked a few brandies in the evening and who then couldn't string two words together. He swayed as he pointed a finger at Cyril.
I know your shenanigans and eggs. Apple ass pie. Just you keep your doors down.
Cyril nodded, and luckily Mr. Williams went back inside. Taking a deep breath, Cyril was sweating buckets. He was terrified that whoever was inside would set his mother alight. He assumed it was one of the Carters or one of the deacons, but as soon as he stepped inside the doorway, he knew it was none of them. It was his father who had returned, looking worse than ever. His hair, thick with grease, was stuck to his face. His eyes were sunken and his cheeks sallow. His clothes were almost hanging off him. Then Cyril's eyes diverted to his mother, who was lying on the floor unconscious. But Cyril could see she was doused in petrol. Then he looked back at his father, who held up a can of petrol and the box of matches. Cyril knew that he would never be able to run into the flat and grab the matches before his father could strike one. The hallway was too long. He wanted to run, though. He wanted to kill his father. His evil, sickly, smug grin was sending Cyril into a place where he was about to lose his mind and his senses, but he knew he must fight to keep his head clear. He had to think of his mother. He had to keep her alive above all else.
What do you want?
Reginald smirked.
You, grovelling for a start. You fucking little shit. You should respect me. I'm your father.
Cyril felt Henry Marsden grab the back of his shirt.
Easy, son, he whispered.
I've got money. Loads of it. You can have it. Please, Dad, let me help me mum. Is she hurt?
Reginald looked down at Peggy.
She's only knocked out. She's still alive. Now get down on your hands and knees and beg for forgiveness.
Do it, Cyril. This man means it, whispered Henry. Cyril dropped to his knees.
I'm sorry, Dad. Please, forgive me.
He would have said anything if it meant his father wouldn't hurt his mother.
Good. Now you can stay on your hands and knees while we talk, because I have things I want to say.
I know, Dad. And I know what happened, all right? Mum told me about Felix.
Cyril noticed his father's face change. His bottom jaw protruded, his nostrils flared in anger, and the colour of his face turned a deep purple. Cyril saw Reginald glance at Peggy, and Cyril could see his mouth was twitching. A frightening thought occurred to him. Had his father just planned to murder his mother in front of him?
Why, Dad? Why do you hate us so much?
Reginald's eyes returned to Cyril.
Hate you? I don't hate you. I don't even fucking know you. All I see is a wannabe gangster that your whore of a mother raised. I guess she wanted you to be like her father, eh? I bet she told you all about him. How he thought he ran fucking Bermondsey and then killed Kenny in Ireland. Well, he's dead now and no threat to anyone. He told me to keep my mouth shut or he would murder me. Ha! And this slut can't hide behind her father now, can she? The bitch.
Cyril remained focused on his father's hands, praying to God that all the while he was shouting his mouth off, he wouldn't strike that match, and the longer he kept talking, the more the petrol would evaporate. He could hear footsteps along the walkway, and he knew then Mr. Bates was on his way. He didn't look away. He held his breath and waited. He was hoping to be able to get the gun from Mr. Bates somehow and blow his father's head right off his shoulders. He knew how to hold the weapon, even how to fire it, but it would be pot luck as to whether he would be a good shot or not. Still, the only way to save his mum would be to blast Reginald away. He heard a click of the gun, and sensed the tension. All he could see as he remained on all fours was the tip of Mr. Bates's shoes. He knew he needed to give Mr. Bates a clue as to what he could see.
"Please, Dad, keep those matches in the box. Don't do this. I know you hate Mum. I don't know why, but you will get hanged if you kill her." "Hanged? Me? Oh, no, no, Cyril, that was abolished years ago. But she, Cyril, she is the guilty one. She and her father." Bang.
Cyril nearly jumped out of his skin from the sound of the gun. He couldn't believe the power of it. His father staggered back in total shock and then slumped to the floor. Cyril instantly jumped to his feet and ran along the hallway to his mother. He tapped her face. "Mum, Mum, please wake up. Mum." She didn't move. Shirley pulled him away to help Peggy. She put her ear to Peggy's mouth. "She's all right, Cyril, love." As Shirley ran her hands around Peggy's head, she felt something wet and sticky, and so she tilted Peggy's head to one side to find the deep gash.
"We need an ambulance."
"I'll go. You, Mr. Bates, need to scarper a bit lively," said Henry. "No point."
Cyril suddenly looked up to see Mr. Bates standing with his legs apart and the gun in his hand, but it was now lowered and hanging by his side.
"Go, Mr. Bates. Go quick before the police get here."
Henry looked at Reginald, who was now dead. The bullet had passed straight through his neck and killed him almost instantaneously.
"Go, Mr. Bates. Please get out of here," begged Cyril.
Peggy flicked her eyes open and tried to smile.
"Cyril,"
she said in a faint voice.
"Don't move, Peggy, love," said Shirley. "Cyril, fetch your mum some water."
Cyril quickly ran into the kitchen and came back with a glass of water. He held it to his mum's lips as Shirley helped Peggy into a sitting position. He looked back at Mr. Bates.
"Please, please, go."
But Mr. Bates still didn't move. Instead, he just stared at Peggy.
"I should have killed him before it got to this. It's my fault he hurt her."
Cyril frowned as he listened to Mr. Bates, who appeared to be in a trance. It was eerie and strange. Leaving Shirley to see to his mum, Cyril got up from the floor. He gripped Mr. Bates's arm.
"Come on, get out of here. They'll fucking put you away for years." "Cyril, son, I'll be dead well before then. Go back and see to your lovely mum. You look after her." "What are you saying?" asked Cyril, as he ran his fingers through his hair and gulped back the lump in his throat. "You know what I'm saying, lad. Now go back and see to your mum. Leave everything else to me."
Tears filled his eyes and then tumbled down his cheeks as Cyril tried to wipe them away.
"Please."
Mr. Bates shook his head.
"No, Cyril. Let the filth take me. It doesn't matter anymore."
"Are you dying?"
Mr. Bates nodded and placed a hand on Cyril's shoulder.
"Yeah. For real this time, lad. You take care of her, like I know you will."
Suddenly, Cyril flung his arms around Mr. Bates's neck and tugged him while he sobbed.
"You were me dad, Mr. Bates. You were always a dad to me."
Mr. Bates hugged him back, and then, as they slowly drew apart, he smiled.
"You were the boy I never had. Now then, don't you let me down. You go and make your mum proud."
Cyril watched as Mr. Bates walked towards the stairs. Cyril tried to stop the tears, but they just kept flowing. The sound of the sirens echoed somewhere in the back of his head. Everything seemed to be in slow motion. Then he saw Frank running along the walkway. Before he could grasp what was happening, Frank grabbed Cyril and held him up.
"Cyril, Cyril, what the fuck's just happened?"
Cyril didn't have a chance to explain. Police and ambulance men pushed both Frank and Cyril aside as they hurried inside the flat. As Cyril looked beyond Frank down the walkway, he saw two policemen handcuff Mr. Bates and remove his gun. He stared as Mr. Bates looked right into his eyes and nodded at him before the police escorted him away.
"Shit, who did Mr. Bates shoot? Is your mum..."
Frank stopped when he heard Shirley dishing out the orders.
"She needs a stretcher, the poor cow. She can't walk. She's been clumped around the head."
"Who hurt your mum?"
Cyril took a few deep breaths to stop himself from fainting.
"Me dad. He did. He was going to set her alight, but Mr. Bates shot him dead."
Frank's eyes nearly popped out of his head.
"Jesus Christ, your dad!"
"Yes and no," replied Cyril. "The only man I ever saw as a father figure was Mr. Bates."
Chapter 19. The talk of the year was the big flash engagement party between Freddie's sister Gwynnie and an army lad called Campbell. Freddie's father Vernon wanted to put on a special do. The well-off folk would be coming, and he didn't want his little girl to be shown up. When the protection racket business was all agreed, the pubs dropped the Carters like hot bricks, having taken on Cyril's firm. Marcus used some of the boxes from the clubs to watch the establishments for a little earner. Paying for the party didn't prove to be quite so problematic as first thought. In lieu of payment for protecting their properties, the pub owner supplied almost all of the bottles of champagne and expensive wines. So the Blakes didn't have to dig deep to find the money for booze. The supply of the hall was a favour owing to Vernon, so that was already sorted. They just needed to find some cash for the food and the music. But Ronnie had just carried out a little job himself and was quids in, so he paid for most of the food and the DJ. All that was left to arrange was what everyone would be wearing. Flossie was in her element, scouring the West End for a new rig out with the cash that Cyril had given her. She was easing into a new life with her fella and enjoying the presence and the respect. Even her mother had taken a shine to Cyril. Flossie knew it was because he bought her flowers when he came knocking. Her mother didn't care where the money came from or how Cyril acquired it. Money was money, and his was as good as anyone else's. As long as her Flossie wouldn't want for anything, then so be it. She had drummed that into her daughter's head for years, and now she could sit back and watch as her daughter flaunted her looks and her new knee-high patent boots, leather coat, and all the jewellery. Cyril had been to Wormwood Scrubs every opportunity he could because Mr. Bates was on remand and was allowed frequent visits. Cyril was gutted every time he had to leave the old man behind because he could see he was deteriorating. It wouldn't be long before he would be visiting him for the last time. It was precisely for this reason that Mr. Bates wanted to give Cyril as much information on his contacts as the young man could store. He'd already given him plenty that had all been committed to memory on each visit, specifically the names of drug dealers who Cyril could trust and the names of the men involved in the protection rackets around southeast London. When the Saturday night of the engagement party arrived, Peggy was still very quiet. Seeing her husband dead in the flat, and aware of the repercussions to her health following the blow to her head, had left her withdrawn. Peggy knew she was a shell of a person she once was. She declined most social invitations, including the one to Gwynnie Blake and Heath Campbell's engagement party. Instead, she'd taken a warm bath, got into her nightwear, curled up on the sofa to watch the telly, and decided to finish the cardigan she'd been knitting forever. Cyril had bought her some fish and chips and a bottle of her favourite beer, Worthington E. He'd also treated her to a bottle of perfume and a box of chocolates. She smiled. Cyril, you've no need to spoil me. I quite like my own company, love. No doubt I'll be asleep as soon as I've eaten these chips. Well, you relax, Mum, and don't wait up. Cyril knocked at Flossie's door with a bunch of roses for her mum and a pretty gold necklace for her. Flossie appeared and twirled around in her new Mary Quant dress and light pink boots. Cyril smiled. Beautiful, my little princess. He handed her the necklace. It was a gold locket, and she quickly put it on. However, this time she took it without a thank you, as if she'd expected a present. Cyril felt a little hurt, because he had spent more time than he should have searching for a unique gift, and if she had taken the time to look more closely, she would have seen it was engraved with her name on it. Yet Flossie was too excited and wanted to get going to show off her new clothes and her new hairstyle, cut and coloured by Vidal Sassoon, no less. Frank had already picked up Trudy, and like Cyril, he'd handed his girlfriend a gold necklace. But he didn't want his engraved. He wasn't as sentimental as Cyril. Trudy squealed with excitement and jumped 2 feet in the air to throw her arms around his neck.
Oh, Frankie, I love it, babe. I really love it. I will wear it always.
All right, Trude, you don't have to burst me eardrums, girl.
Trudy hadn't taken any money from Frank for this evening's new outfit. She was working hard, and so could afford to buy what clothes she needed as well as save her pennies for the special day. However, when Frank told her that if she was out with him, she was never to put her hand in her pocket or else he would be offended, Trudy was grateful. Frank was proud of the girl. He could see she didn't take everything for granted from him. He admired the fact that she was overjoyed with her job at the hairdresser's, despite it earning her very little income, and he couldn't be more pleased that she wanted to make her own way in life. As the four of them made their way to the hall, the girls' chattering became more excitable. Guests were outside taking in the fresh night air. Some were smoking, while others held a flute of champagne. It was evident that they were members of the upper class, just by the clothes and the way they held their drinks and cigarette holders. Cyril didn't care. He was there as a guest of the Blake family. As he worked his way through the crowd, gripping Flossie's hand, he was patted on the back and acknowledged by so many people. Flossie smiled too, as if she was just as popular. But the fact was, she was only greeted because she was Cyril's bird. Otherwise, no one would have really known or even cared who she was. Trudy couldn't care less who greeted Frank or her. She only wanted to have a good time with her fella, a few dances, a couple of glasses of baby sham, and a snog before she walked through her own front door. Marcus appeared and waved at Cyril to join him at the bar. He ordered the drinks, along with a glass of bubbly all round. Vernon Blake, sporting a navy blue suit and a white shirt, was the smartest Cyril had ever seen him.
"Cyril, me boy, have you got yourself and your lovely girl here a drink?"
His voice was deep and gruff. Cyril nodded.
"Yes, Mr. Blake." "Thanks, mate. Thank you so much for all the booze. It won't be forgotten."
Cyril shook his head.
"You owe me nothing, Mr. Blake."
Vernon patted Cyril's shoulder, smiled generously, and left. Flossie had clocked the conversation.
"So did you pay for all this?"
Cyril wasn't sure of her tone.
"What, me? No, don't be daft. I just paid for a few bottles of champagne."
"Why?"
"What do you mean?"
"Well, why are you spending money on this? I mean, it's not as if it's our engagement, is it?"
Cyril was flummoxed.
"Hold on a minute, Flossie. It was an engagement gift."
Seeing the annoyed look on Cyril's face, Flossie decided not to push the matter. Instead, she sipped the champagne on offer and gazed around at the women. Pleased that she had the latest outfit, she knew she looked good. Freddie was heading Cyril's way, with his hand firmly clutching a young, pretty blonde girl. Cyril smiled to greet him.
"And this is?" asked Cyril, smiling. "This is Cindy. Cindy, this is Cyril."
Cindy held out her hand as if she should shake Cyril's, but Cyril just laughed and hugged her instead.
"Nice to meet you, darling. And it looks like Freddie has bagged the top prize."
As soon as Flossie heard that, she dug Cyril in the ribs.
"Sorry, babe. You are an all my princess."
The girls got to know one another while the men gathered around the bar. Just as the men were about to talk shop, Cindy sidled up to Freddie.
"Blakey, would you get me a drink, please?"
Cyril held his breath in to stop himself from laughing, but Frank couldn't. He chuckled into his pint. Freddie was embarrassed.
"Yes, yes. Go over there with the girls and I'll fetch one over."
"All right, Blakey. I'll have a port and lemon," she said,
as she kissed Freddie on the cheek. Cyril couldn't hold it in any longer, bursting out laughing.
"Blakey? Oh, fuck off," said Freddie,
now bright red. But Frank and Cyril still found the term of endearment hilarious and wouldn't let it drop. As the drinks flowed and the